वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम अज्ञान्तिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोविष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम् वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां साग्रजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानो सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वंच कल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे कृष्णा एक्सट्रीमली सॉरी दैट वी हैव टू चेंज द स्केड्यूल ड्रामा वाज सपोज्ड टू बी बिफोर बट आई हैव टू गो आउट समवेयर फॉर अ प्रोग्राम सो आई थॉट विल डू इट अर्लियर सो टुडे वी आर गोइंग टू discuss about a very divine personality who has inspired thousands of people, probably millions of people across the world, especially his poems and his devotional understanding of spiritual life have really brought a lot of hope, especially in Maharashtra. I'm talking about one of the greatest saints, Tukaram Maharaj. So I'm going to speak today stories from the life of Tukaram Maharaj, along with some lessons that we can learn from the stories, and how in our principles of devotion, as we are practicing our spiritual life, we will definitely need inspiration of personalities like this, who have done something substantial in their spiritual lives. So generally, whenever we talk about great personalities like this, there is always some place associated with them. In fact, places like Dehu, Pandharpur, which are very much connected with personalities like Tukaram Maharaj, are eternal abodes of pilgrimage, and they become Tirthasthan literally. When we go to such holy places, we get an opportunity to be in the vibrations of such holy men. If we study the life of the Pandavas when they were in exile for 13 long years, what they essentially did in that exile period was they went to different holy places. They just kept traveling across India. If you go anywhere in India, you'll always find that Pandavas were here, you know. Whether you go to Vrindavan, whether you go to Mayapur, whether you go anywhere in India, literally everywhere the Pandavas have been there. And what did they do when going to these holy places? The only thing they did was satsang, associated with holy men. And that's exactly what Lord Ram did also when he was those 14 long years of exile. So we have the opportunity of associating ourselves with such great people when we hear about them, when we read about them, when we meditate on them. That's actually satsang. That's actually divine association. So, so there is a very interesting saying which really has inspired me personally. This says that if an egg is broken from outside by force, then life is lost. But if an egg breaks from inside and comes out, then life is born. So great things are always born by contemplation. So it's not that when we hear about these great personalities, some transformation, some miracle will happen in our lives. But when we hear about these great personalities and meditate on these great personalities and really try to understand what these people stood for, then there is a possibility of some transformation happening in our lives. So, Tukaram, he was born in Dehu in 1608, and he was born to very simple parents, Boloba and Kanakai. They belonged to a lower class Shudra family. He had two brothers also. So interestingly, when we find the life of these great people, you don't find any of them having extraordinary qualities or rather extraordinary births. They have very simple births and they go through difficulties like everybody else. So his father, when he was very young, he got an illness and he died. And all the responsibility of the family fell on Tukaram. Tukaram married two times. The first wife, Rakuma Bhai, she died due to starvation during a famine. And so many difficulties they went through that famine period that practically they lost everything. And then he again married to another lady. Her name is Jija Bhai, or famously known as Avali. And she was a very young girl when they married, and through her he had three sons. So essentially, if you look at Tukaram's life, there are many, many miseries that have come in his life. So when we look at miseries that come in great people's lives, those miseries teach us great lessons. When miseries come in our life, those miseries break us. But when miseries come in great people's lives, those miseries shape those great people. Which essentially means that when miseries come in our life, and if we learn to handle the miseries properly, those very miseries can shape us into beautiful personalities. When a mountain is bombarded with rain, a huge mountain, when there is torrential rain on the mountain actually starts shining. When the gold is heated more and more and more, all the impurities in gold vanish. They go away. So similarly, when difficulties come in great people's lives, those difficulties essentially end up making great people even greater. And they end up becoming stories for us to follow. One devotee was sharing this very interesting story of how he got connected with Krishna consciousness. So he was saying that he was watching a television serial on the TV. This was ages back when there was no, you know, cable connection. There was only just Doordarshan. And this person was a manager in a very, very big organization, big company. And he was watching television. And in the television, he saw a serial that really inspired him. This was a serial of one of the mathematical wizards of our country. His name is Ramanujan. So it was his life story basically on the television. And so this person, the serial was showing about how this person was a mathematical genius. So he answered one exam, mathematics paper, and in that paper there was one question that was given, the first question of the paper. He spent the 2 hours of exam only answering the first question. And he went into so much depth of answering that first question that he never got time to go to the second question also. The paper had quite a few questions. So when the mathematics professor, he saw that question, the answer of this person, he was completely bewildered. And he said, how can a human being make so much analysis? And he was just a mere student. So they actually picked him up. This is during the British time. They actually picked him up to study how he thinks, you know. And they started asking him questions. And they just couldn't believe that somebody could have such a genius. So they actually took Ramanujan to London and kept him in a hospital to study how his brain works. So the serial was showing all this. And while he was in the hospital in London, so they were, you know, doing their research and all that, they were providing him food. And naturally, they first gave him some non-vegetarian food. And Ramanujan said, I can't eat this. I'm a student of Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, and because I've understood the principles of Gita, I'm very clear I don't want to eat this. So they were not giving him anything, but he was so adamant and so insistent that he cannot eat this food, that ultimately they, you know, bent down and they provided what he wanted. And in that serial, they showed Ramanujan reading the Bhagavad Gita and taking inspiration from the Gita. So this man who was seeing that serial, seeing Ramanujan taking inspiration from the Gita, he said, if such a genius has so much inspiration from the Gita, definitely I should read it. So he went and bought a Bhagavad Gita by Srila Prabhupada, Bhagavad Gita as it is, and he started reading. And that inspired him so much that eventually he became a devotee. And at some point of time, he quit his profession and he actually took up full-time service. This person, now he is the temple president of ISKCON Tirupati, Revati Raman Prabhu. And can you imagine his inspiration from that one serial, from that one episode of him, Ramanujan reading Bhagavad Gita, that he has built an entire temple. The temple costs, you know, about 30-40 crores. The entire temple and every penny for building the temple has been raised only by selling Bhagavad Gita in Tirupati. Can you imagine? So where it began? It began by seeing a television serial and getting inspiration from one, you know, so-called scholarly, mundane person. But essentially, it took another level. So essentially, when people go through misery in their life, when people go through difficulty in their life, that time, the real substance of a person shines. Generally, when a regular human being who doesn't have any spiritual background, who doesn't have any understanding of the scriptures, goes through difficulty, the difficulty crashes them, difficulty crumbles them. So, here, we are finding in the life of Tukaram Maharaj, he went through so many difficulties in his life, but those difficulties actually started shaping him into what he eventually became, a great personality. So, Tukaram Maharaj, the connection we have, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, with Tukaram Maharaj is that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come in the dream of Tukaram Maharaj and give him instructions. So, Tukaram Maharaj is one of those personalities who was personally initiated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through his dreams. And his devotion to the Lord was a very personal type of devotion. He would say that he wanted to taste sugar but not become like sugar. Sugar cannot taste itself. So what is the point in becoming sugar? The impersonalist philosophy, the Mayavad philosophy is about how we should become like God, or rather we should become God. But if you become sugar, you can't taste sugar. So Tukaram Maharaj would prefer, I want to taste sugar, I don't want to become sugar. So he had a very personal way of approach towards God and devotional service. So there are many stories of Tukaram Maharaj's life. We will take one by one a few stories. And each story, I'll end by talking about how that story is relevant to our life and how we can apply the principles of the story in our spiritual practices. One of the very famous stories of Tukaram Maharaj's life is where he was self-inspired to write so many poems. Whatever you would see in his life, whatever you see around him, he would write a poem about it. And those poems are so much surcharged with devotion. They were so much surcharged with the principles of bhakti that Srila Prabhupada has taught us, that our parampara has taught us, that practically the beauty of the poem was that not just it was surcharged with devotion and surcharged with the philosophy of bhakti yoga, but more than that, it was in such simple language and such with such simplicity is presented that anybody could relate to it and anybody could remember it. So one time a very jealous Brahmin, he shouted at Tukaram for writing poems which are based on the Vedas. And he was so envious of Tukaram, because can you imagine the writing of this person? And this was a time when there was no internet, there was no Twitter, there was no Facebook, there was no WhatsApp, you know. So it's not that Tukaram Maharaj is advertising his poems everywhere, you know. Just because the poems are so potent, the poems are so pure, and the poems are so simple, that it just started spreading like a wave. And people started just, you know, chanting, discussing, and remembering these poems very, very easily. And Tukaram Maharaj became very famous. But this man, who was a Brahmin, supposed to be a scholar, but essentially he couldn't match even the simplest of Tukaram Maharaj's poems. He became very envious. When people become envious of somebody who is successful, somebody who is doing really well in connection with the Lord, a person tries to pull the other person down. So here, the interesting part, of course, is that as far as spiritual life is concerned, you cannot be envious. Nobody can be envious of somebody's spiritual qualifications. You know, I mean, I've never seen somebody saying, "Arey, wo sola mala kar raha hai, main kyun bara kar raha hu, main bhi sola karunga." You know, you don't get envious of person's spiritual activities. You get envious of person's material activities. He's singing so nicely, I want to sing better than him. You know, he's speaking so nicely, I want to speak better than him. He is doing some physical things so nicely, I want to do better than him. But when it comes to a deep spiritual practice, he's remembering Krishna so nicely, I want to be better than him. Not possible. You don't get that feeling only. You cannot feel envious of somebody's spiritual qualities. So here, what this person was feeling envious of was not of Tukaram's devotion, but of Tukaram's fame. And he knew that Tukaram's fame is not coming just because his devotion was great. According to him, Tukaram's fame was coming was because his poetry was great. So he was envious of Tukaram's ability to write poems. And this person expressed his envy by publicly proclaiming that how can a person from a lower caste write poems that are in alignment with the Vedic scriptures. So he created such a hype among the Brahminical caste that literally at some point of time there was so much pressure on Tukaram that he was told to throw his poems into the river Indrayani. And Tukaram literally took those poems, whatever he had written till then, he carried them with him and with his own hands deposited in the Indrayani river. Of course, Tukaram was heartbroken because the poems are not just the way of making him famous. That was not his, they were his devotional ecstasies. They were his experiences of Krishna in his life in a very tangible way. And it's not that he actually planned for those poems. It just came out as Krishna's realizations, as a gift of his devotion. So when Tukaram, put those poems into the river, he just sat over there on the banks of the river and he was literally going to give up his life just sitting there. So there are many versions of what happened after that. He sat there for 12 days literally. And he sat on one rock for 12 days. He just didn't move. He didn't eat anything. He didn't drink anything. He just didn't move from there. And after 12 days, some people say that the goddess of the Indrayani river, she appeared with the poems and gave it back to him. There's another version. Some people say that these poems came floating back. You know, the papers just floated back to where he was. But there's another version which is, this is the version I prefer to believe. And this is a version that is very human and very practical. It is explained that when Tukaram was sitting there on that rock, you know, just fasting and just praying and just intensely lamenting for the loss, all the villagers from across that area, thousands of villagers just gathered together, and each of the villagers, each one recited one poem. Literally everyone remembered all the poems of Tukaram Maharaj. And literally the collection of poems, it didn't remain not just on paper, but it remained in people's hearts. So that was the real glory of Tukaram Maharaj. And then people understood that these poems are no more just physically on paper, but they are etched in people's hearts. Can you imagine the influence that Tukaram Maharaj had on people, that everyone remembered every poem? thousands of poems and thousands of people literally remembered. And can you imagine the inspiration that Tukaram Maharaj got at that point of time? So essentially, what we understand from this is that you don't have to prove to the world that you are right. Many times when we go through such phases in our lives, where somebody blames us, somebody criticizes us, somebody finds faults at us, the most natural tendency of a human being is to start justifying, start proving that I am right and you are wrong. Tukaram could have easily created an agitation among people in the village, in few villages. He could have taken a vote. He could have taken a, nowadays you have this petition, online petition, A sign karo, O sign karo. He could have done so much. But he just preferred not to do anything. And in not doing anything, he did so much. So essentially, in life, when we go through mockery, when we go through criticism, when we go through people finding faults at us, we don't necessarily have to retaliate. We don't necessarily have to retaliate to prove that we are right. Sometimes, just being silent, just allowing Krishna to act through us, that is a better way of functioning. And then the message comes even more powerfully than what it should if you had retaliated. We find in the story of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the story of Haridas Thakur and Gopal Chappal, we find that Haridas Thakur, he was speaking about the glories of the holy name. And this person, Gopal Chappal, he actually was so envious of Haridas Thakur, so envious of him that he actually criticized him publicly. And Haridas Thakur didn't retaliate at all. He just kept quiet. And the next day, the very next day, Gopal Chappal, his nose literally melted. He got leprosy, It's not that Haridas Thakur prayed for that, but it just happened because this man offended such a great devotee like Haridas Thakur. But Haridas Thakur, on his part, he never took offense. He just remained quiet. We find in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling in South India, there was this a Brahmin who was studying the Bhagavad Gita in Srirangam. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw this Brahmin studying the Bhagavad Gita, he was very stunned because this Brahmin was not even holding the Gita in the right direction. Because he had no ability to read the Gita at all. He was completely uneducated. But this man had tears in his eyes, constantly crying. So Mahaprabhu went and asked him, "Why are you crying?" And this man, he spoke out his heart. So he said, "Viprakahe murkami shabdata na jani." He said, "Viprakahe murkami." He said, "I am a fool. Shabda artha na jani." Though I am trying to read the Gita, I cannot understand shabda artha, the meaning of the words of the Gita. I just can't understand any of them. So Mahaprabhu's question is, if you can't understand the meaning of the Gita and you are a fool, why are you reading the Gita? And then this man says, "Shuddha shuddha Gita padi guru agyamani." The only reason I'm reading this pure Gita, the message of the Gita, is because I'm following the instructions of my guru, my spiritual master. So this man, he was convinced that he's a fool. And not just he was convinced, everybody around him was making fun of him. Everyone was making fun of him that, what kind of a fool are you? You have no ability to study, read any scriptures, what to speak of reading in Sanskrit. He had no understanding of any language. Literally very, poor. And still is trying to read. Mahaprabhu was pleased, not with his ability, but with his attitude. What was the attitude of this man? The attitude of this man is that, murkami shabdartana jani. But his attitude is that, shuddha shuddha Gita padi guru agyamani. My spiritual master has told me to read the Gita every day. So I am reading 18 chapters of the Gita, 700 shlokas of the Gita every day without understanding any word, without understanding any meaning. Can you imagine? Even though we can at least read the Gita, we have no desire to read the Gita. And it's not that Guru has not given us instruction. Every person who is coming to the ISKCON temple and attending classes has been given personal instruction to read the Gita every day if possible. But unfortunately, we think that we are intelligent. That's the problem. We think that we are intelligent. And therefore, for us, for people who are intelligent, it becomes very difficult to follow the instructions as it is. It is very difficult to follow instructions as it is because our intelligence becomes an impediment. So sometimes, for spiritual life, we don't need intelligence to counter what is happening in our life, but we need the right attitude. And therefore, here we find in Tukaram Maharaj's life, it's not that he didn't have intelligence. He had great intelligence. The poems were the exhibition of intelligence. And though he had great intelligence, though he had great fame, though he had great following, he didn't use any of them to counteract what he's going through in his life. He allowed Krishna to help him. He allowed Krishna to direct his life in the way it is happening. When we go through misery, when we go through criticism, when we go through challenges in our life, and especially in a Vaishnava society, it is very much possible that somebody may get envious of us, somebody may get jealous of us, somebody may find some faults in us. In such situations, what do? Just remember Tukaram Maharaj, sit. You don't have to fast, of course. You don't have to, you know, not drink water and just fast. But you need to learn to depend on God. We don't have to prove that we are right. In the process of trying to prove that we are right, we are actually disturbing our own minds. Tukaram Maharaj did not take the trouble of organizing the proof that he is right. But rather, he allowed his faith to continue and he allowed his devotion to continue. And then eventually, things came in the light. In the spiritual world, at one point of time, the devotees in the spiritual world, they were discussing. They were having a discussion among themselves. That Kali Yuga is coming up, somebody should go down and preach. And they chose Nama Prabhu, the holy name personified, to go down and preach by compiling Abhangas. So Tukaram Maharaj said he is the holy name personified who has come down to preach in this age of Kali. And therefore, in the Vitthal temple, there is one step which is called as Namache Payari. It is explained that Tukaram Maharaj's Samadhi is that step. So what is the mood of this personality? The mood of this personality is that he wants, his desire is the devotees step on him before going in. So he is a step in the temple just aspiring for the dust from the lotus feet of all the devotees who are going in. Can you imagine? Somebody who is such a qualified, you know, acharya, somebody who is such a great devotee of the Lord, such a person, what is his aspiration? His aspiration is to become a step on which devotees step and go ahead. That's the Samadhi of Tukaram Maharaj. So essentially, the way in which these great personalities deal, act, live their lives becomes an example for all of us to follow. In fact, when Tukaram Maharaj would do his bhajans and abhangas, he would sing. Thousands and thousands of people literally would come to hear his singing every evening. And what he would do is, he would begin the singing. At a certain point in time, he would disappear. And what he would do after disappearing, he would come out and arrange the shoes of the devotees who have gone in. That was the service he would do. Can you imagine? And he would wait for some time so that everybody enters in. And once he sees that everyone is in, then he would come out and arrange the shoes of the devotees, taking the dust of the feet. So essentially, we understand from this part of Tukaram Maharaj's personality that the substance of a devotee is not about how close he is to Krishna. It's about how much he is willing to serve the devotees of Krishna. So we may be very close to Krishna. We may have a direct connection with Krishna. We may know his phone number also, you know. We may know his email address also. And we may have a hotline with Krishna also. But just because we have a direct connection with Krishna, it doesn't mean that we are actually successful as devotees. To the extent we are ready to serve the devotees of the Lord in a menial way, to the extent we are ready to extend ourselves to serve the devotees of the Lord and actually humble ourselves in front of the devotees of the Lord, to that extent actually the mercy of the Lord and the connection of the Lord will become stronger. And therefore, every great devotee of the Lord, we find this quality exemplified. They are not aspiring to serve the Lord only, but they are aspiring to be servants of the servants of the servants of the Lord. And in that way, they please the Lord more. So in a telescope, the greater the number of lenses between the eye and the, you know, the object, there are multiple lenses in between. There's the first lens, the last lens, and between there are multiple lenses. The more number of lenses there are in between, the clarity of the object will be much, much higher. That means, between Krishna and us, the more number of devotees are there, that much our vision of seeing Krishna will be better. Many times people aspire for direct connection with Krishna. The unfortunate part is, if you get a direct connection with Krishna, our vision of seeing Krishna will be defective. We will take Krishna too, we'll be too familiar with Krishna and we'll offend Krishna. And therefore, through the devotees like Tukaram Maharaj, we understand that the more there is between us and Krishna, the opportunity to serve the devotees, the opportunity to connect with the devotees and go through the devotees, the more is the clarity of our understanding of Krishna and our appreciation of Krishna. So, Tukaram Maharaj, in this aspect, he teaches us this concept of simple living and high thinking. He didn't have much. He had a very simple lifestyle, but his thought process was very high. So, the greatest joy of the soul is in this mindset to see everyone better than me. So can you imagine a personality who is like heading that whole community, a personality whom thousands of people are coming to hear? What is his mood? His mood is that all these people are not coming to hear me, all these people are coming to give me an opportunity to serve them. That was the mood in which Tukaram Maharaj was functioning. That was the mood in which Tukaram Maharaj was conscious of Krishna. So, the goal of life is to please Krishna. And Krishna is pleased when we are in the mood of being servants and the servants of Krishna. And when we accept the mood of pleasing Krishna, to that extent we actually end up pleasing Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a story of Indra and Prithu Maharaj. So, Prithu Maharaj had performed 99 Ashwamedha Yajnas. And Indra had already performed 100, and therefore he was Indra. So, when Prithu Maharaj reached 99, Indra became very insecure. He started feeling that Prithu is wanting to become the next Indra. So, every time he was trying to do the 100th Ashwamedha Yajna, Indra would go and steal the horse. And constantly he was stealing the horse, one after another, one after another, one after another. And he did it so many times, so every time Indra would steal the horse, Prithu would go fight with Indra and get the horse back. And as soon as the sacrifice would start, again Indra would steal the horse. Again Prithu would go fight and get the horse back. And again Indra would steal the horse. It is going on and on and on. At some point of time, the Supreme Lord Vishnu, he got, you know, completely fed up of this whole fighting business. So, the Lord, through Brahmaji, he appeared to Prithu Maharaj and gave him a very simple instruction. He said, I am happy with your sacrifice. You don't do the 100th one. And Prithu Maharaj just gave it up. He never did the 100th sacrifice. Indra got the name of doing 100 sacrifices, but Prithu got the benefit of doing 100 sacrifices. What is the benefit of doing 100 sacrifices? Pleasing Krishna. If you can please Krishna at 99, why do you need to do 100? Many times people forget the essence and they focus on the detail. And the detail can be so complicated, but without the essence, the detail is useless. So Indra was stuck with the detail, 100 kya na dekho. And in the process of doing the 100, he forgot the essence and he displeased Krishna. So many times in our life, we may do the detail perfectly. Our chanting of 16 rounds, perfect. Ek jagah pe, bina hile, bina ek bhi jhapki liye. We can do the 16 rounds like that. Follow the regulative principles perfectly. Do everything, execute mega projects and build massive temples, distribute millions of books and preach to thousands of devotees. We can do all that. But in the process, we forget the essence of pleasing Krishna. And what is the meaning of pleasing Krishna? Pleasing Krishna essentially means pleasing the devotees of Krishna by being a humble servant of the servant of the servant of the devotees. We forget that essence. That no matter all the details perfectly executed, the details just remain useless. Just like Indra achieved the 100th target, But in the process of achieving the target, he forgot the essence of the target. The essence why we do the 100 sacrifices is to please Krishna. And if we do the 100 and don't please Krishna, what is the point in doing the 100? Prithu focused on the essence. He didn't focus on the numbers. He didn't focus on the details. Sometimes we get so much caught up in the number game, so much caught up in the detail, that our mind gets occupied with the detail and forget the essence. People like Tukaram Maharaj, they may have great number of followers. Thousands of people may be coming to hear them. But still, for them, the essence is more important than the detail. And therefore, Tukaram Maharaj comes out in the middle of the kirtan, serves the devotees by placing their footwear in the right place, and in a humble spirit, not really advertising it. It's not that he is saying, "Dekho, main bahar jaake shoe stand mein, chappal dalne wala hoon, dekho." You know, it's not that he's advertising and going out. He goes out without anybody's knowledge, he just does that service and comes back. That's it. Tukaram Maharaj, another time, he was helping one of his neighbors to shift the fence. And so Tukaram Maharaj would do these odd jobs to somehow or the other sustain his life, because they hardly had anything. And he would take up something that would give him a little money, so that somehow his family is taken care of with the bare minimum. And then he would spend the rest of his time chanting the holy names of the Lord, writing poems and singing the songs of the Lord. So one time, Tukaram Maharaj, he was shifting the fence, and the neighbor, he got extremely angry on Tukaram Maharaj. And he was so angry that he took 8 sticks, and these sticks were thorny sticks, and he actually hit him with those sticks. It was so very painful, but somehow Tukaram Maharaj just tolerated it. He never said anything. Then much later, this is the time during the Ashad Ekadasi kirtans. In the middle of the kirtan, there were thousands of people in the place, and Tukaram Maharaj was leading the kirtan. And in the middle of the whole kirtan, he found that this man, this neighbor of his who had hit him so badly, he was missing. And he asked people, why is he missing? And then he found out that this man is having some kind of pain in the leg. So Tukaram Maharaj left that kirtan on such an auspicious, important day, Ashad Ekadasi. He went to that neighbor's house and massaged his feet. Can you imagine? Somebody who has hit him so badly, somebody who has physically abused him, rather than trying to developing hatred towards him in your heart, he is going all the way to his house on such an auspicious day when the holy name of the Lord is being sung, when he is actually leading the whole kirtan. He goes and he massages his feet. So essentially, from this, we learn the concept of forgiveness. So many times in our life, there will always be opportunities where you will find either some devotee offending you through some heavy words, or he may actually offend you by, not offering you something. You're going in the prasadam line, that person who is giving sweet, nikal jao, aage jao, So we have so many reasons to get offended, small things sometimes. And stories like this really inspire us to realize that life is very short, and ultimately at the end of life, all we have is the devotees of the Lord who can actually help us go higher. And in such times, even if we find some fault in the devotees, even if we find there is some defect in the devotees, ultimately they are devotees of the Lord. So the defect is between them and Krishna to deal with. But between us and them, we are not the ones who are going to deal with the defects. We are not the ones who are appointed to correct them or to rectify them. Our relationship with the devotees should be in the mood of the servant of the servant of the servant. And rather than holding grudges, we should learn to forgive. In the Mahabharata, we find the story of Yudhishthira Maharaj and Draupadi having a discussion about what to do with Ashwathama. What to do with Duryodhan when they came out from the gambling match, and there was so much misery that all of them were going through. And at that point of time, Draupadi, she was just not able to handle it. And in fact, Draupadi at some point, she became so much filled with hatred towards Duryodhan that she was expressing her hatred. And Yudhishthir Maharaj at that point of time made a very interesting point. He said that if we become envious of Duryodhan, we are actually caught up in the same disease as Duryodhan. So, yes, it's very difficult to follow. It's very difficult to live by. But ultimately, when we understand that the mood of a devotee is on a very high platform. So many times for us, it's very easy to wear a kantimala, wear a dhoti kurta and tilak and say that we are devotees, you know. Very easy to follow the externals of spiritual life. But stories like this teach us the mood of what a devotee, true devotee is. Tukaram Maharaj, he wrote a poem, and in that poem he made a very beautiful point about criticism. So, so he said, the one who criticizes you, that person's house should be next door. Your next door neighbor should be your greatest critic. The reason is because, he said, critics or people who criticize are like pigs who remove all impurity. They actually, you know, eat away all the impurity in your lives. By giving you criticism, they're actually removing all the impurity from your life. And those who are praising, he used a very heavy word. Tukaram Maharaj, those who praise us, they are like pig's stool, smell very badly. So look at the mindset of a devotee. He is saying those who criticize us, they are actually our well-wishers, because they remove all the contamination from our hearts. And those who actually praise us, they are actually our enemies, because they add more contamination in our heart. First of all, there is so much pride. On top of that, if somebody comes and praises you, your pride only goes up, you know. If your balloon is so big, after somebody praises you, itana mota ho jata hai. This is the false ego, you know? Growing bigger and bigger and bigger. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, the whole ISKCON movement, the preachers, the devotees of the Lord, they are like, you know, carrying pin. So sabke false ego ko pin marte rehte hai, you know. So you come with a big false ego and you come into this ISKCON temple and then you hear, you know, you are tuch, tum kuch nahi ho, you are servant of the servant of the servant. It's a little hurting to the false ego. But that's what is needed to actually purify us and help us go higher. And to make us understand that for us to be able to grow in our spiritual lives, we have to learn to let go and forgive. One time, Tukaram Maharaj, he took up a job of guarding the fields of one person named Janoba. And he was singing, you know, absorbed in singing songs glorifying the Lord. And he was saying that when one seed is deposited on the ground, when the seed grows, unlimited amount of corn grows on it, on that seed. So similarly, everything in this world is filled by Panduranga, filled by the Supreme Lord. And he's closing his eyes and he's absorbed in this thought. You know, just by seeing a seed on the ground, just by seeing one corn grow, this was the realization that he got. And one person was very envious. He sent a lot of cattle into the field and, you know, the cattle ate away all the crops. And then later on, this the person was the owner, he came back. He was extremely angry with Tukaram that he didn't take care of the crops. And then they had a discussion and the panchayat was called. And Tukaram was asked to sell his house to give back the loss. And finally, the panchayat, they asked them to measure the grains, what were remaining in the field. And when the grains were measured, there was 15 times more grain than what regular harvest would give. So the people were completely bewildered. Half the crops were eaten away by animals. And after half the crops were eaten away by animals, whatever remained, that was 15 times more than what during a normal crop period would come. And this man was so impressed, you know, looking at Tukaram's devotion, he understood this naturally cannot be an ordinary person's activity. And he gave a huge portion to Tukaram Maharaj. And Tukaram Maharaj never brought it home. He just distributed it and came back. So, sometimes as devotees, when we practice spiritual life very intensely, our family gets quite upset. See, it happens with great devotees also, you know. What to do? That's how it is. You can't impress everybody in the world. And you can't inspire everybody in the world. You can't please everybody in the world. So Tukaram Maharaj, he was so absorbed in the holy name that some days he would just go and sit on top of a mountain. And for long, long periods of time, he would just be closing his eyes and meditating on the Lord, singing bhajans, singing the holy names. And Tukaram Maharaj's wife, though she had no liking, affiliation whatsoever for spiritual life, but she had a great affection towards Tukaram and she had a great devotion towards Tukaram. That was her qualification. So sometimes somebody in the family may not be exactly a devotee, may not really be connected to the Lord. But if that person is connected to the devotee of the Lord and serves the devotee of the Lord, it's as good as being connected to the Lord only. So Tukaram Maharaj's wife, though she was not really directly connected with Vitthal, not directly having any kind of affection, in fact she had great hatred towards the Lord. Because she always felt that, you know, Krishna took him away from her. So, she would not eat till her husband ate. So one day, generally she had a very interesting way of finding out where her husband is. I don't know if the technique works nowadays. But, you know, abhi aajkal to mobile phone hai sab jagah, you know. You go inside the water also mobile phone works nowadays, you know. So easy to track, you know, where the husband or wife is. So, what she would do is, there would be three big mountains on one of which Tukaram would be sitting. So she would go below every mountain and she would pick up a stone, a rock from the mountain and put it next to her ears. So if from that rock she can hear the holy name, then she knows on top of the mountain my husband is there. Can you imagine? The power of Tukaram Maharaj's purity and, you know, his chanting, the entire mountain would be vibrating with the holy name. I mean, if we chant, if the person who is sitting next to us also doesn't understand her. That's our devotion, you know. What does speak of a mountain? Can you imagine Tukaram Maharaj's intensity in devotion? That the entire mountain will be vibrating. She just had to pick up a rock from the mountain and hear. She's hearing holy name. And you can imagine her intensity. If she has the power to hear the holy name from a rock, we don't have the power to hear a holy name from our own mouths, you know. And when we are hearing kirtan, you know, thousands of times holy name is being chanted, we hardly hear one or two times. We hear the music more than the holy name. So here, so one day she came and she heard, you know, rock, she heard the holy name being chanted. And she decided to go up. And while she was walking up the mountain, she was carrying food for her husband, a thorn pricked her feet. And she was in intense pain and seeing her painful condition, she was holding things in her hand, so she was not really able to take out the thorn. Seeing her painful condition, Lord Vitthal himself came out to take out the thorn. And when Lord Vitthal appeared in front of her, he wanted to help her. She turned her face away. She said, I can't see you. You are the person who has taken my husband away from me. And Vitthal, he ran and came the other side. She again turned her face, you know. She kept turning her face in eight directions. And again the Lord is running around her. Can you imagine, you know? And then finally she closed her eyes. And Vitthal appeared in her own heart. And he said, why are you running away? Why are you turning away from me? So he said that both of us are in the same state. You are also trying to search for your husband. I am also trying to search for my devotee. We will go together and search, you know. So then finally the Lord removed the thorn from her feet. And they went up together. Can you imagine the kind of, you know, connection with Krishna that these great personalities had. On an external level, you may say that, you know, she's not really devotee and all that. But because of her connection with the devotee, just look at the kind of reciprocation that Krishna is giving with her. So whether we are devotees or not devotees, whether we are chanting the holy name or not chanting the holy name, what is important is the devotee connection, the Krishna connection. So somewhere or the other, if you are connected to somebody who is connected to Krishna, that's good enough. This is as good as being connected to Krishna in one way. So one time Tukaram Maharaj, he was chanting and thousands of mosquitoes were biting him. Thousands of mosquitoes were around him and some were biting him. He was just completely unbothered and focused on the holy name and absorbed in the holy name and chanting. So essentially, Tukaram Maharaj, he would say that, he wrote a poem, and in this poem he said, The lotus flower doesn't know the taste of nectar. The nectar is tasted by the bumblebee that, you know, enters the lotus flower and tastes the nectar. And the cow, mother cow, she eats grass and produces milk. The mother cow never tastes the milk. The milk is tasted by the calf. And the pearl is born in the mouth of the oyster, but the pearl can never, but the oyster can never experience the beauty of the pearl or, you know, use the pearl in any way. Somebody else uses it. So similarly, you're saying that the Supreme Lord, the holy name of the Lord is so much nectar. There is so much nectar filled in the holy name of the Lord. But unfortunately, the Lord can never taste his own holy name. Of course, probably at this point of time, Mahaprabhu also intervened. And he came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to taste his own holy name, to taste the experience of what Radha was experiencing, chanting Krishna's name and remembering Krishna's pastimes. So essentially, Krishna's holy names is like one of those aspects of the Lord that really intimately connect us with Krishna, and it gives us some experiences that the regular aspects of the world cannot. One time, there was one lady, she had gone with her husband to a lake. They had gone to, you know, a holy place, and then on the way back home, they on the banks of this lake, they wanted to have their lunch and then continue on the journey. So as they stopped there near the lake to have their food, the husband told his wife that, "I'm just going having a quick bath and I'll come back, then we'll eat." So the wife laid down the food and she was waiting for her husband to come. And the meanwhile, the husband had gone into the lake and he was having his bath. Suddenly he started screaming from the lake. He started screaming for help. So the wife thought that he is just making fun, you know, just to pull her leg. So she didn't take it so seriously. But at a certain point she realized that he is really serious, he is in some trouble. And then she went close and saw that there was a crocodile pulling her husband down into the lake. And this man was struggling for his life. The crocodile was pulling his leg down. And he was, you know, she had no idea how to help him. She didn't know to swim. So she actually removed her sari and threw one section of the sari on towards her husband to pull him out. But somehow or other, you know, the crocodile just dragged him in and he was gone. So she could hear the scream of her husband. She could see her husband dying right in front of her eyes. From that day onwards, for the next 20 years literally, 20 years, this lady literally couldn't sleep even one night. Literally couldn't, because every time she would close her eyes, that scene would come in front of her eyes and she would hear the screaming of her husband and she would just not be able to sleep. And she went to so many doctors, she went to so many psychologists, she took so many medicines, nothing helped. Not even one night she got proper sleep. One day, after many years, after these 20 years literally, she visited an ISKCON temple. And she was just sitting there, she was going waiting for darshan. Somebody came and told her about the holy name, about the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And she said, "Nothing can help me in my life." And this devotee was really talking to her about the glory of the holy name, talking to her about the power of the holy name. And then finally, somehow or the other, this lady, she opened up what she was going through. And this man, he told her, this devotee told her, "You chant the holy name of the Lord sincerely with intensity, I can assure you, you will be able to overcome what you are going through." This lady had no faith, but she said, "If you are telling me, I will do it. Tell me how much I should do." He said, "Chant 16 rounds." She, that day itself, she started 16 rounds. She asked for the beads, she took her mala, and she sat in the temple and chanted 16 rounds straight for 2 hours. The next day, she came back to the temple. And she said, "You will not believe it. In the last 20 years, the first time I slept the whole night without even waking up once." And just looking at this miracle in this lady's life, literally all her relatives, because everyone has seen her for the last 20 years going through so much trauma, literally all her relatives wanted to know what she is doing. And she started getting one by one all her relatives to the temple. And so many people in her family, literally 20-25 people in her family became devotees just by seeing this one lady's transformation. Can you imagine? Of course, this is not advertising for, you know, sleeping pills, you know. Jab karo, neend aa jayega, you know. I am not recommending people to do that. All I am telling you is that, you know, the holy name has a transformative effect, you know. The holy name has a power to actually transform our lower consciousness to a higher consciousness, and we can overcome so many of our shortcomings by chanting the holy name of the Lord. For great devotees of the Lord, they don't need such stories. For great devotees of the Lord, their faith in the holy name is by tasting the holy name. For people like us who have no taste in the holy name, we need stories like this that inspire us. And you tell, "Arey, barabar hai, maybe I kar raha hun. I'm standing same mantra only, you know. Maybe it'll take some more time for me to see the effect." But essentially, when we hear the pastimes of great devotees like this, having so much faith in the holy name, experiencing so much taste in the holy name, we develop our faith. Maybe someday we will also experience some tangible transformation in our hearts, and then eventually we will start tasting the holy name of the Lord. Of course, Tukaram Maharaj, at some point his glory, his fame spread so much that Shivaji Maharaj, he was inspired by Tukaram, and he actually wanted to become a disciple of Tukaram. At some point of time, Shivaji Maharaj wanted to renounce everything and just come and be a disciple of Tukaram Maharaj. But Tukaram actually denied it. And he told him, "Your service to me is by serving the society." And he actually, being a sadhu, being never ruling a kingdom, and not just not ruling a kingdom, he was not even a person who was been able to perfectly manage his wealth and finances in that sense. Tukaram gave advice to Shivaji Maharaj how to run his kingdom. And Shivaji Maharaj sat for a long period of time, heard from Tukaram how to manage and run his kingdom. So it's not that the great devotees of the Lord are fools. It's not that the great devotees of the Lord don't have capacity to do things in the mundane world and therefore they become devotees. It's not that people become renounced because they don't have anything to do, they can't contribute to the world. They can, but they don't want to. They can do everything perfectly, but they prefer to focus on something higher. And therefore, when we hear of stories like Tukaram Maharaj, and seeing the transformative effect on personalities like Shivaji, if we realize the power of great devotees of the Lord, we should never underestimate what they can do and what capacities they have. And Shivaji Maharaj, when he went back from Tukaram's place, he told Tukaram Maharaj that, "I'm going back to my palace, but I'm not going back as a king, but I'm going back as a servant of the people whom I'm serving." So he took that spirit of Tukaram with him, and he continued serving the society in the mood of a servant of the servant of the Lord. In the last days of Tukaram Maharaj, he came to his wife and he asked her, "Do you want to come back with me to the spiritual world? I'm going to the spiritual world." She said, "Who will take care of the children and the cow, you know, and the cattle?" So Tukaram Maharaj, he just, you know, realized that some people need some more time, and he started singing, and right in front of thousands of people, literally, an airplane came and it directly came from the spiritual world and carried Tukaram in a self-same body. Tukaram Maharaj didn't have to die. He just went back to the spiritual world in the same body. Can you imagine how pure that body was? Can you imagine how pure that personality was to be able to go back to the spiritual world in the same body? In fact, in Dehu, there is a particular place where this pastime happened. And at a particular time in the year, the tree, it kind of shakes and you know, one branch snaps off, you know, exactly at a particular time in the year, commemorating this particular Leela of the Lord. So, essentially, when we hear of great personalities like Tukaram Maharaj, it's easy to see the magical side of these personalities. But more important than the magical side of these personalities is the human side, where they were struggling as regular human beings, but in spite of struggling as regular human beings, they exhibited extraordinary qualities that showed the world that how, when regular human beings exhibit extraordinary qualities, they don't remain regular human beings. They manifest as great devotees of the Lord, and they become examples for the world to follow. So today, let us all, in the mood of Tukaram Maharaj, take shelter of the holy name. And more than that, let us take shelter of the devotees of the Lord who are actually instrumental in us being able to chant the holy names effectively. And in that mood, if we can actually develop some taste for the holy name and some taste for serving the devotees of the Lord, I think that will be the perfection of our life. We may not have the Vaikuntha plane coming down to take us to the spiritual world. We may not have mountains shaking, you know, in our vibration of the holy name, but probably our heart will melt and there is some tangible taste that we will develop towards the holy name of the Lord. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.